Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how American adults are getting failing grades in healthy lifestyle behavior from Oregon State University. Then we're going to explore adherence to nutrition recommendations and the use of supplements essential for vegans from the University of Eastern Finland. And also mindfulness meditation eases chronic lower back pain. Then vegetarians less likely to develop cancer. Bilberry extract can ease the damage of stress, which many people have, and the top herbs promoting healthy blood sugar and supporting your efforts against diabetes. And vitamin B12, most people know what it is. It's a vitamin, but they don't know what it does. Well, what if I told you it protects your heart, your brain, your eyes, and more? These are some of the issues we're going to take on dealing with health and nutrition. But also, every day this week, we're taking on major social issues. Today's big issue is our foreign policies and who comes up with them and how they have universally failed, every single one. And we'll go into depth on that. Also today, from some of our audio files, George Carlin. We're going to talk about George's concern about, gee whiz, we're really into protecting the fetus, but once it's born, not so much. Then a mother's research shows that the reporter, the medical reporter, the science reporter for CNN, was completely wrong. And first we hear from the reporter saying there is no connection whatsoever between vaccines and autism. And then this mom, Hannah Cartmell, responds, a very appropriate response. Robert Reich talking about a Bernie for those who are skeptical. And for those of you who thought it'd be just a great idea, things are rough. You don't have money for rent or food or health care. So why not go into the armed forces? Hey, there they're going to feed you, they're going to house you, you're going to be around people, so you have lots of friends, you get health care, you get money in the bank. But a Special Forces Master Sergeant, Stan Goff, has a little different perspective. And this was just, he was asked, and it looks like an impromptu discussion. It's a short piece, very meaningful. If time permits, the truth about American educational system. Now, this guy has the guts to tell the truth about the American educational system and the dumbing down of the American population. And I'll ask you what you think. So those are the issues, plus scientific proof that kindness makes you smarter, stronger, and happier. And also, I'm going to follow up with something I mentioned yesterday. It's all about the context. If you're on the Upper West Side and you've just gotten out of a class at Juilliard, beautiful school, great school, and you're at Lincoln Center, there's all forms of restaurants, there's art films, there's boutiques, there's everything you'd ever want as far as shopping. There's a great park, and the likelihood is that you're going to go home and focus upon conversations about your school, your challenges, your friends. But if you had an accident and you had to have, let's say, $500, I'm pretty sure someone around you or you could come up with that $500. What if I told you that 63% of all Americans can't raise $500 for an emergency, like a sudden need for car repair, so they can go to where they have to go? Well, what is this except willful blindness, intentional not knowing? that things are getting an awful lot worse for over 200 million Americans and their communities. Now, I have broadcast from the Upper West Side for a long time. I've been up there when it was not even considered a good place to live before the whole neighborhood was gentrified. It's different today. It's a beautiful place, nice people. But that doesn't mean that those people are connected to the rest of the people in this country or even concerned about them or even know about their plight. And we should. We should take a moment, first of all, and appreciate if we're not suffering, that is a blessing. But also, is it not also a blessing to help those who are suffering? Isn't that part of why we're alive and on this planet, to help others? So I'm going to deal with that today and let you know the truth, not about Wall Street. There's nothing truthful about Wall Street, where you're back up to about $17,400 in the value of the stock, all hyperinflated. It's an enormous bubble. The real estate market, an enormous bubble. The commercial real estate market, a bubble. The credit card market, a bubble. And virtually all the money banks are making, they're not making because they're smart business people. Building factories, employing people to living wage, reindustrializing communities. What they could have done, should have done, didn't do it once. No, the only reason any banker is able to go to work each day is because we, the people that they don't like, keep giving them bailouts. All the money they make comes from bailouts. All of it. All of it. And yet these are the people that we somehow think are smarter than us. These are idiots. These are real stupid men and women. And they've pulled it off. They're really smart when it comes to manipulating their image. So as long as they can borrow $6 trillion and buy competition, we make that look like, gee whiz, look at how healthy they are. How'd they make the money? Show us where you've made a dollar, honestly, by helping rejuvenate America. You can't, you haven't, you're frauds. Everyone on Wall Street, I make no exception. Every banking community on Wall Street, you're parasites. And the sooner the American public realizes to tear up your credit cards, take money out of your banks, stop supporting you, the better we'll be. But more on that later. Let's begin because we have a lot to share. As a vegan, I have to be concerned that I have the nutrients my body requires at the cellular level. And one of those that the meat eater gets is vitamin B12. Now, you can get B12 if you're a conscious vegan because you can get it in miso and some fermented products. But I believe most people would be better off just taking a simple supplement. You can take a vegan supplement and get B6, folic acid, and B12. Those three nutrients really are important for your brain, and they function in the formation of blood. And B12 deficiency causes a lot of diseases, and deficiencies can be treated by diet or B12, and if you're really deficient, you can get an infusion, or you can take it sublingually. If you took 1 milligram sublingual of methylated B12 per day, that's terrific. It's water-soluble, and it helps. It helps on so many levels. Brain scans can now measure brain volume, and a study of patients deficient in B12 showed their brain volume at half of those with high blood levels of B12. So it's an important component of our nervous system and for DNA synthesis. And without B12, the body can't manufacture blood and leads to anemia. And B12 is also responsible for memory. And deficiencies of B12 cause fatigue and diarrhea, memory loss and anemia, and poor nerve function. And another function of B12 is that it lowers the blood level of homocysteine. Now, you've heard me many times mention that homocysteine is a naturally occurring amino acid in protein, but without enough B12 in the blood, homocysteine creates inflammation. And homocysteine is now considered a more important marker for heart disease and stroke than cholesterol. And since heart disease and stroke are the main causes of death of many Americans, reducing homocysteine in the blood is not good, and increasing B12 in the blood is good. So make sure you're getting your B12. Now also, we now have more people suffering from diabetes in America than obesity, than heart disease, and cancer, and arthritis, and yet virtually nothing being done about it. Now, of course, the best way of dealing with it is you change your lifestyle. Let me give you a good example of someone that many of you know. For 22 years on our sister station in New York City, WBAI, in the afternoon, was what many considered the finest talk-in show called Talk Back with Eutrice Lead. And Eutrice would hold forth for a couple hours, and it was a forum for the public and the communities, which is something I believe that the station could really benefit from, regearing their programming to serve the communities. Because if you're trying to compete where everyone else is, and they have more and even better of many things than you do, then the likelihood is that you're going to be the last place selected to listen to. But imagine that you were doing something that no one else is doing, broadcasting important issues from all the different communities that are not getting any attention. Then you have a viable market serving those who are underserved and lots of programming that would not exist and opportunities for people to be on the air who would never get that opportunity. It's just a suggestion for the future. But the future should be now because those communities really need voices. In any case, what I found was that I did not know that Eutrice had diabetes for 22 years and was on meds. And so a year ago today, this is 1 year anniversary of Eutrice Lead's death date. Now, this is not a secret. I'm not talking out of shop. She's been on the air and discussed this. And from her hospital bed where the doctors opened her up and then closed her up, because they said her lungs were just filled with cancer, as she was given very short time to live. Now, today, she has no diabetes, and she hasn't had diabetes in 7 months. She was on my protocol for 5 months, and strictly, she lost over 85 pounds, improved her heart, improved all her blood profiles, cholesterol, triglycerides, homocysteine levels, all in normal. But also she's no longer diabetic, no longer has to take those meds. Now, was it a drug? Was it a miracle? No, it wasn't. Simple lifestyle and behavior modification. Here are some of the things that she used that I would recommend you in this audience consider. You can look up the science behind it. It's all fully documented in the scientific literature. It's just not promoted. Why? Well, because doctors are not taught in medical school natural approaches to prevention or treatment. They're taught how to deal with the pathologies, meaning the body's broken, the body's a machine. There is nothing that can be done except suppress the symptoms and try to maintain it. And this is a very Machiavellian concept of the body, and one that I feel is non-constructive. I knew Krishnamurti, one of the most wonderful minds I've ever met in my life. And in a conversation that he and I had, he said something that just made so much sense. And then it was also in his book. He said, "It is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society." Listen again, break it into what its meaning is. "It is no measure of health to be well-adjusted to a profoundly sick society." It means maladaptation. And the more you think about it, more often than not, we, as individuals and collectively as families, communities, societies, we want to make sure that we fit into the prevailing society. And in doing so, we frequently take the best that we could be, should be, and we neuter it so that we don't stand out too much. We don't exaggerate ourselves from the norm. And so we adapt to this middle area, this gray, where life has no major ups, no breakthroughs, no catharsis, no epiphanies, no ooh-ah, no wonderful moments, unless it's passively spectating to someone else doing it. And then we kind of look in awe at them, but never look at ourselves in the mirror and say, well, I can do that. Sure you could. You telling me that someone who invented the Q-tip, a little stick with two pieces of cotton, that you couldn't do something equal? But he did it. And we have to also think, what could we do? So Krishnamurti is saying, you're not healthy if you adapt to the people who are sick around you. You're healthy when you put yourself into a healthy environment with other healthy people and you manifest health. So then you can help the people or not by being examples and there to be a bridge for them if they want to transition from their lifestyle, which is their freedom and their choice. We are not health fascists. We do not force or cajole anyone to our beliefs. That is not right. People have a right to make the choices, but they also, unfortunately, frequently don't accept the right that when their reward comes from the choices they made collectively, if it's a heart attack or stroke or diabetes or obesity or divorce or bankruptcy or rage or depression, that they contributed to it. But they do. And then by supporting them, we enable them, we all do. So when they look at diabetes, all the doctors see diabetes as you against your blood sugar, you against your pancreas, you against your body. Your body is broken. Your body is now a danger to you. Your blood sugar is a killer. And hence the doctors, the medical paradigm, wants you to chemically change that. Take this insulin or take this glucagon, whatever it is, because that's the only thing that's going to keep your body from killing you. We do the same thing with heart disease. You must take these drugs. You must take this balloon angioplasty, but it doesn't reverse anything, doesn't cure anything, doesn't matter. You must take it because your heart is working against you. They never look at the idea that maybe I worked against my heart. Maybe I worked against my pancreas. Maybe I overloaded my fat cells. We never look at the idea that the body is not a machine. The body is a living life force. It is commanded by eternal energy. When something is immortal, it cannot die. The energy of your body cannot die. That is a scientific fact. Your cells can. The energy, which is your consciousness, was there before you were alive. It'll be there after. Where it goes, how it manifests, is still up for discussion. But we know that it's there. So why not honor the life force? Why not honor positive choices? And that's what Krishnamurti was suggesting. Don't think you're healthy because you have no overt disease. It could take 20, 30 years of processing bad habits before you end up with the bad disease. So then we come back, and here is Eutrice Lead. She loses 85 pounds. She's walking 8 to 10 miles in the morning. For the first time in her life, she does a state championship and wins a gold medal. First thing she's ever won, first race she's ever done at 61 years of age. She no longer has diabetes because she chose to honor every choice and honor the body. Hence, the body is not the enemy. The pancreas is not the villain. The body isn't broken. It's just inappropriate choices. Hence, change the context of how you think about things. And it changes your reality. Cinnamon bark. Just less than a teaspoon of cinnamon each day can help lower blood glucose levels in people. That would help you. The benefits seem to apply to the cassia, C-A-S-S-I-A cinnamon, also known as Chinese cinnamon. But I also have seen Jamaican cinnamon and Burmese cinnamon also work. And it doesn't take much. Loaded with phenols and anti-inflammatory, and it brings down your blood sugar. Then glucomannan, gluco, G-L-U-C-O, mannan, M-A-N-N-A-N. And it's packed with fiber. It can lower your blood sugar level, put it under control. Then something I mentioned last week that is really a very important part of Ayurvedic medicine, and there's a lot that shows that bring down your blood sugar level, really could save the lives of diabetics, generally in the 400 milligram range for lowering blood glucose, and that is Gymenia, G-Y-M-E-N-M-A, and Sylvestria, S-Y-L-V-E-S-T-R-E-A. Then fenugreek, fenu, F-E-N-U, Greek, G-R-E-E-K. It's a very popular herb, and it can lower high blood sugar. And there are a number of clinical trials showing that fenugreek can improve blood sugar and cholesterol profiles. And something that thousands of you came down to the ranch I had in Texas, the Healing Springs Ranch, wonderful place. And one of the workshops we did, and I only did it in August, for the month of August, and we would sit under the ponderosa pines, and we had prickly pears growing everywhere. And some were green, but most were red, and when they'd get about the size of a kiwi, I would show you how to take a little knife and cut the little tiny fine hairs off, because those would actually prick your skin, and that's why it was called prickly pear. And then you peel back the skin, and it's this wonderful little orbs of red and purple, very, very, let's say, kiwi tasting. And people would eat those and throw them into a smoothie. And those are wonderful if you have problems with diabetic conditions. In fact, clinical evidence shows prickly pear cactus may lower your blood glucose levels in diabetics by 46%. So that's good. And if you can go to the health food store and find them already cut and ready to eat in a little trays. Stevia, S-T-E-V-I-A. It's an herb from South America. It's a natural sweetener. It's about 500 times sweeter than sugar. It only needs a drop or two, and it reduces your blood sugar if you have type 2 diabetes. So replace all of your sugars with stevia and anything you're going to sweeten, and watch the difference. And finally, turmeric. Now, we all know that turmeric's the traditional Indian culinary spice. Turmeric, T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C, it lowers your blood sugar, turns off inflammation, helps repair the DNA, lowers your cholesterol. It's just good at every level. From the British Journal of Cancer, they looked at the lifestyles of two studies involving 61,000 vegetarians for 12 years. This is a really good study. And they found that if you're a vegetarian, you're less likely substantially to have cancer. And if you're a woman, you reduce your cervical cancer rates twice that of meat-eating people. Breast cancer, big reduction in breast cancer, and men, prostate cancer. So want to live a longer life than healthy vegetarianism. And finally, bilberry extract can ease the damage of stress. This is in the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry, and they found that bilberry can reduce stress-induced damage to the liver, and the research used the extract and found that 5 days of supplementation with bilberry extract exerted a protective antioxidant activity, and that's terrific. And bilberry extract is easy to get. It's been around for a long time. And it's important, especially if you have any form of stress-induced problems in the body. Most people do. We're going to take a break and come right back. And before we do, here's something to think about. This is the latest study from Waking Times. It says, what if the cure for your cold was opening a door for a complete stranger? Or watering your neighbor's roses while they're away on vacation when you notice them wilting? How about stopping your headache by putting some spare change in someone's parking meter when it's about to expire? reversing inflammatory joint pain by letting someone cut in front of you in traffic without getting miffed. These are not just Pollyanna wishes for curing mental and physical ailments. Science abounds with proof that kindness cures and even makes us smarter. Now, there are opponents to smile or die phenomena, but many studies actually provide sound evidence that kindness and thereby happiness make us healthier. In fact, a Department of Psychology study found that happy people become happier by being kind. In their study of two groups of people, 175 undergraduate students, another more than 100 women, results showed that happy people scored higher on their motivation to perform and their recognition and enactment of kind behaviors. Happy people have more happy memories in daily life in terms of both quality and quantity. Subjective happiness was increased simply by counting one's own acts of kindness for 1 week. And happy people became more kind and grateful through the counting kindness intervention. So, kindness makes you smarter, stronger, and happier. Think about it, what it means to be the other person in life. Think about, can you do something to lessen their suffering, bring some happiness to them? In the process of helping them, you're honoring your own happiness equation. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. We have a lot to share, especially about the Middle East. I just want to take a moment. I found this interesting. Psychology Today, Land of the Free and Depressed, a look at the cost of depression in America. Quote, 15 million Americans, that's a small figure, by the way, I've heard it more likely 40 million, are depressed on a yearly basis. And it goes into some of the reasons why in diagnosing. Well, if you lack sleep, if you lose interest in things that previously had given you joy, if you feel guilt, if you have lack of energy, if you lose your concentration, lack of appetite, psychomotor agitation, suicidal ideation, these are the things that get you diagnosed. But here's what this author says, and I absolutely agree with him, that we all are faced with crisis of different dimensions and different severity. And there are periods of time where we go through these. But the argument is that generally in a minimum of just 2 week duration, depressions are situational and can represent a patient's deep breakup, financial hardship, a physical illness, or the loss of a loved one. Regardless of whether depression is situational or a major disorder, it's costing us a lot of money. And how much? At least $83 billion a year minimal. And then it goes into the prices of drugs, which are $1,000 or more per month for many. And then it talks about social factors. Quote, we see that economic hardships result from depression, but financial disasters are not the only loss. Depression results in emotional and social burdens as well. Depression can result in relationship hardship, divorce, drug and alcohol addiction, self-harm, suicide, eating disorders, even physical abuse. All of these horrible effects cost our society even more financial hardship in their own individual entity. Drug and alcohol treatment can cost thousands of dollars out of pocket each month. Divorce proceedings and lawyers are not cheap, and funeral costs are not free, not to mention the emotional harm that occurs due to a broken family or the loss of a loved one. Self-medicating for depression by using a line of cocaine, a couple shots of whiskey, or a few painkillers may initially take the emotional pain away for a very short time, but once that substance leaves your system, the depressive feelings come back and often hit harder than ever. It may even spiral into an addiction. According to studies, the divorce rate is as much as 90% higher, 90, in couples with a partner who struggles with untreated depression. The solution, and then he talks, says something interesting you rarely see them say. He says that it's not about the drugs. We're over-drugged as a society. And the drugs have their own problems. Here's my take on this. We have not looked at the more humanistic, as a society, individually certainly have, a humanistic way of empowering one to deal with the issues that before we felt were out of our control. Most people, before they have depression, they have anger issues. I've always in my own life seen anger in people that was unresolved, and then it becomes depression because at some point they just give up. They begin to burn out. You can only hold your anger so long, even if you feel it's justified, or even if it's self-righteous anger, and then you just diminish. You can't keep on adrenaline rush indefinitely, and you dissipate. And that's when we stop losing interest in things because we no longer feel we have any control over us, and we start to lose the defining qualities that made us feel so good or exuberant or optimistic at some point in life. Beginning the first week of June, I'm going to begin my one and only health support group for the year. My last health support group was so successful, we got the results published in a major peer-reviewed journal, which is out now, and very pleased about that, and as was the last one. This one's going to have four components. One, I'm going to do the ultimate anti-aging. We're going to meet every 2 weeks on a Saturday at a wonderful location. I just found a great location yesterday that can hold as many people as we need in a beautiful, a cathedral-like environment. It'll be in the afternoon on a Saturday so people can attend. And it's on anti-aging. Everything that I now know, which is a whole lot more than a year ago, because some whole new things have come up that can really slow down and reverse the aging process. Also, we're going to deal with diabetes. We're going to have the most comprehensive anti-diabetic program, which will also help people lose weight who are overweight because part of the problem of diabetes is excessive caloric intake and too much body mass, too much fat on the body. We're also going to deal with depression. We're going to have a holistic approach, including advice on getting off the psychotic depressive medications, the antipsychotics, antidepressives, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, Effexor, etc. And also those who have high blood pressure. So diabetes, high blood pressure, and who are also overweight, depression, and those who want to reverse the aging process, who may or may not have problems. But I have a new way that we can regrow hair, new way we can help our skin, and it's going to be wonderful. It's going to last 3 months. Everything that I now can do in 3 months where it used to have taken me a year, meeting every 2 weeks for about 2 to 3 hours. And there'll be a lot of experts I'm bringing in as well. If you want to join me, you'll call this number, 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422, and that begins the first Saturday in June, and we'll run for 3 months, and I'll be there at every meeting, and we're going to turn around a whole lot of people's lives using only lifestyle and behavior modification, not medical. So that's what's coming at you, and that's the only one I'm doing next year. So hopefully those of you who see the benefit will come, especially those who are overweight, who are diabetic, those who have depression, and those who want to reverse and high blood pressure, those who want to reverse the aging process. This is the kind of thing that can save lives. Now, we're going to hear from a mother who, Hannah, Cartmell, C-A-R-T-M-E-L-L, who talks back to CNN's so-called expert health reporter, who we hear from first.
Vaccines are safe. Autism is not a side effect of vaccine, or to say it another way, because some people don't hear this well, vaccines do not cause autism. Vaccines do not cause autism.
Vaccines do not cause autism.
Vaccines do not cause autism.
Hey guys, Lisa Joyce Ghost here, the Rav with the Thinking Moms Revolution. This video is for Liz Cohen, CNN health correspondent and author of The Empowered Patient. Liz, that little guy up there in the corner is my son, Noah. Noah suffered an encephalopathy, which of course, left untreated, led to encephalitis. This condition was compounded by chronic esophagitis as well as autistic enteritis, which led to long-term central nervous system damage, which had a deleterious effect on his proprioceptive and vestibular functioning, which of course, ultimately culminated in long-term neurological damage. For those who are briefed by their producers, who are briefed by their advertisers, paycheck. It's what's called vaccine-induced autism. Some people don't hear this well. May I suggest if you cannot hear it, you read about it? There are now hundreds of academic and scientific studies that are helping parents on the road to recovery for their kids who suffer vaccine-induced autism. I can send you my studies, Liz, but warning, you will probably need to buy a medical dictionary and for someone to help you with the big words. Do the work. People listen to you.
Vaccines do not cause autism.
That's just one mother. There are over a million. In one day, I filmed over 400 at a meeting that they had in Chicago for my film Autism. Every one of them was pro-vaccine, including four physicians. Four mothers who were all medical doctors. One was a top doctor in her field in pediatrics, and none of them knew the truth. Now imagine how easy it is for the American public, who doesn't read scientific articles, to trust their doctor, who doesn't read scientific articles and doesn't look at the original article and then challenge it. Is this good research methodology? Who paid for this? Where are these ghostwriters writing the report? As a result, it's one of the biggest medical crises in history. Now to the issue of the day. It's time to stop the wars by stop supporting them. How do we stop supporting wars? Well, we look at the people who profit from wars. And one of the ways that we can stop wars is by stopping the industries. Everything that we do has an impact. If you took your money out of their banks, that hurts them. If you don't watch their television programs, that hurts them because their advertising dollars are based upon how many people watch them. If you begin to do some critical thinking, as many Americans now are, and you realize I shouldn't be going to Walmart to buy something that's made in China that used to be made in the United States, and the people at Walmart don't care about me, the owners of Walmart don't care, the companies in China don't care, and the people bringing it back in the United States who took that company over, loaded it with debt, and then took it to China after they had made their profit, they don't care. So if none of these people care, why would I then empower, unless I suffer from the Stockholm Syndrome, why would I empower my captors, my economic captors, my educational captors, my nutritional captors, eating their junk food, eating their GMOs? Putting my money in their bank, watching their stupid, supercilious entertainment. So the moment you take yourself off their grid, financial grid, you're making a difference. This is from Joachim Hagopian from Global Research. I think it says it all. Quote, as both a West Point graduate and critic of the American empire, to me, the support our troops sentiment has long outworn its propagandized welcome. U.S. empire has been using that contrite expression to brainwash Americans and justify its wars and violence for far too long. It sprang up during the last decade's protracted war losses in Iraq and Afghanistan. Never was it ever heard during the Vietnam War, when our combat veterans returned home feeling defeated and suffering from untreated post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, shunned by a nation that had bitterly turned against them and their war, particularly of their own peer group. Fast forward to four decades and three war defects later, and our government is still sending Americans off to fight and die in Afghanistan, Iraq, and now Syria. Over the long haul, supporting our troops has resulted in the United States being the most warring, aggressive nation on earth, bar none. We're now in approaching April 2016. Our violent country will be killing other human beings somewhere on the planet. From 223 out of the last 240 years, the United States has been in existence. That's 93% of the time we're killing people. As a nation-turned-empire, we've been destroying human life. That's certainly nothing to be proud of, yet it's our troops who've been the murdering culprit. No compassionate, rational person could possibly place blinding, obedient support behind such rampantly wanton disregard and contempt for fellow human life. Another fact that Americans can't be proud of is knowing that the most warring nation on earth, just since World War II, alone has murdered up to 30 million people around the globe, with an estimated 90% of them being civilians. Having initiated 201 of the total 240 armed conflicts from the end of World War II to 2001, it then follows that between those years, the U.S. empire of chaos and destruction had murdered 27 million innocent people whose lives have tragically been cut short through no fault of their own for simply living in the wrong place at the wrong time, belonging to the wrong ethnic nationality, targeted by America's full-spectrum dominance and global superpower. And that was before the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And what does it take to be targeted as a U.S. foreign enemy? Any country whose leaders choose to support their own citizens' well-being, true independence and quality of life over the U.S. empire's fascist national corporate interest is attacked economically through sanctions and embargoes, politically through propaganda lies and threats, or militarily through unnatural disasters. Just ask Cuba, Venezuela, Haiti, Panama, Iran, Syria, Iraq, Libya, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Sudan, Congo, Donbass, Palestine, or Russia, just to name more than a dozen. People around the world have been victimized for well over a century by America's empire and its willful rape and pillage of their lands in the name of stolen natural resources and inhumane forced slave labor. And those are the nations whose puppet dictators willingly succumbed and acquiesced to the U.S. demands and pressures. In fact, in the tradition of the British Empire, North America's entire domestic and foreign history has been made by genocidal killing, enslaving, stealing, subjugating other darker-skinned races into death and submission. Given this context, with a bigger picture perspective, supporting our troops is really supporting mass murder around the world. So bearing that sobering, grim reality in mind, it's time for Americans to cease and desist with their rah-rah that only adds insult to injury to the rest of the victimized world. In 2008, the U.S. spent more money every 5 seconds, to wage an immoral, unlawful war in Iraq than the average working American earned all year. 80% of America's taxes are earmarked towards funding the annual Pentagon military spy budget to wage war or spy around the world. When that kind of war investment, misappropriating U.S. citizens' hard-earned tax dollars, places such lopsided priority over the well-being of its own people, with only over a decade of wearing down an overextended military, forced into fighting 3, 4, or even 5 consecutive combat tours on 2 simultaneous war fronts. It's also overburdened and decimated America's middle class. And now, for the first time in nearly half a century, the U.S. middle class is no longer a majority. In the United States, a large chunk of it died when sinking into an expanded lower class of impoverishment, poverty-stricken Americans barely making ends meet. But considering the cost of war to victim nations, where since 2003 the U.S. has killed over 1 million people in Iraq alone. This figure, released from a study earlier this year, is admittedly a conservative estimate. The study concludes that up to 2 million in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan have been killed by American wars. These colossal crimes against humanity constitute supporting the U.S. federal government, as well as its military troops, a moral crime. America's complete and utter destruction of the world's second and third largest oil producers in Iraq and Libya, turning them into failed states because their one-time U.S. ally leaders moved away from the U.S. petrodollar. This is unconscionable, yet that's the tragic outcome of blindly supporting our troops. More than any other single country, the U.S. today is responsible for allowing ISIS to make billions. Are the two biggest buyers of terrorist oil out there? Yeah, they are. And who's buying the oil? Well, it's Turkey. But I thought Turkey was supposed to be against ISIS. Well, they were supposed to, but they actually enabled them. So in effect, supporting our troops is also supporting both crimes against humanity as well as worldwide terrorism. Supporting our troops has contributed to the world becoming far more armed and dangerous today than at any prior time in recorded human history. Our nation is also responsible for spearheading the biggest arms race in history, where it's not just the U.S. empire spending so many billions on weapons of mass destruction, but due to empire aggression, it has forced Russia and China to answer by also significantly increasing their military spending. A dozen years ago, the U.S. defense budget nearly equaled the rest of the world combined. But during this century, two protracted U.S. wars plus smaller secret ones around the world, America's military expenditures have soared to over $1.5 trillion per year. And so here we are. Events and developments have escalated tensions and confrontations between the U.S. and Russia and China in recent weeks, with U.S. backing NATO member Turkey's reckless shooting down of the Russian plane. In addition to the probable ISIS bombing, taking down and killing 224 aboard. Of the nearly 200 countries, no other nation on earth has more than a few military bases outside of its own country, except the United States. In contrast to the rest of the world, the U.S. sends 1.5 million military occupiers on active duty to over 1,000 militarized installations on every continent throughout the globe, and just this week the Pentagon announced a worldwide expansion of military bases. Without specifying the total number under the auspices of secrecy, West Africa, East Africa, Afghanistan are slotted for full-scale bases. Meanwhile, U.S. Special Forces that covertly operate by stealth surprise, often at night in guerrilla-style fast-strike operations, are busily secretly committing acts of terror in over 135 nations globally. That's about 75% of all the world's nations. So let's look at the way our federal government supports our troops. After sending over 6,800 U.S. soldiers, along with 7,000 civilian contractors, to their early graves fighting in America's two longest-running wars in the nation's history, leaving 1 million wounded, personnel filing VA claims ranging from life-threatening physical injuries to emotional crippling post-traumatic stress disorder traumas and scars, the feds have betrayed our patriots, serving our country by treasonably targeting all returning combat veterans as the biggest enemy threat on American soil. Indeed, veterans, gun owners, and dissidents are deemed to pose a greater danger than even the Fed's own created terrorist monster, ISIS, that Obama's open border policy facilitates easy access to establishing terrorist cells inside America. Those veterans seeking help are customarily snowed under by lethal big pharma poison, fast becoming addicted and even more unstable. Many are haplessly waiting and dying on lists for medical services that often don't come soon enough, exposing 40 veterans who died awaiting services on invisible lists at a Phoenix hospital alone triggered a major scandal last year. For several years running, on average, 23 veterans kill themselves every 24 hours. The overloaded Veterans Administration has been caught grossly ill-prepared to adequately deal with the sheer enormity of the problem, with so many severely damaged ex-soldiers in dire need of long-term assistance and care. One study predicts that up to 500,000 veterans will end up with criminal cases in the court system, with nearly half of Congress millionaires, and none of them serving the new ones in uniform. The D.C. warmongers are ever at the ready to send young men and women from America's lower class into harm's way, fighting Obama's dirty little secret wars in multiple combat zones around the world that the public never even hears about. Yet you'll see next to none of them or their sons or daughters fighting in the same war, the way our own government has used, abused, and not supported our troops is despicable. And then the sizable percentage of Americans who are so vocal in their claims of supporting our troops are too frequently disingenuous. Often hypocrites merely mouth the same banal platitudes year after year from their ivory-towered pretend world, living so far removed and disaffected from actual war conditions or even knowing anyone who wears a uniform. Never fathom the tragic insanity or bloody lifelong consequences that U.S. wars ravage on millions worldwide, permanently damaging all involved. Americans, having a clue, will glibly pay lip service, "Oh, we owe so much to our soldiers who fight to keep us safe and free." What bubble, what planet, what century are they living on? End quote. I'm Gary Nall, and that is today's program, and that's one of the reasons, more to come, our endless wars, our endless imperial overreach, and we wonder why people resist us. Have a nice day.